Scottish Qualifications Authority, National Qualifications, 2009. English for Speakers of Other Languages. Higher Listening. Listen to the following discussion. Answer the questions that follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 1, before you hear the recording.
Now, today we have the news that the European Commission is not going to force Britain to use metric measurements for goods. This means that our British stones, pounds and ounces are safe, at least for the time being. Later, I'll be talking to Simon Wilson from the Weights and Measures Society, but first a little background. The plan was that greengrocers would go metric in a couple of years, but now the European Commission has decided to abandon the idea. After months of consultations with British industry and consumer groups, the European officials are now convinced that emotions are still running high and that moving over to metric weights would just turn more people in Britain against the European Union. The Commission also accepted the British government's argument that European industry needed to sell to American markets. And of course, the United States doesn't use the metric system and perhaps wouldn't want to import products using only metric weights and measures. So, the Weights and Measures Society have been fighting compulsory conversion to the metric system for years. Tonight in the studio, we have Simon Wilson to speak for them. Simon, good evening.
Hello, Lisa.
So, good news, a victory?
Yes, we're very pleased.
And what do you want to see now? A return to the old system?
No, not at all. We can't turn the clock back. We're in favour of freedom. People should be free to use whatever system they like, without fear of prosecution.
And some people have been taken to court over weights and measures, haven't they?
Yes, most notably Steve Thoburn. He was a greengrocer in Sunderland. He owned three shops in the city, and in 2001 he was arrested for selling bananas by the pound. This caused outrage in Britain. He was the front page story in several newspapers at the time. And the thing is, Steve wasn't anti-metric. He just wanted his customers to have the right to choose, so he sold in pounds or kilos, whatever they wanted.
But what's so bad about the metric system? Surely it's easier to count with it. I mean, you can multiply everything by 10. 10 millimetres to a centimetre, 100 centimetres.
Well, that may be so, but we've been using the British system for hundreds of years, and we don't want people to be forced to change over. That's the point, individual freedom.
But surely we don't want to go on this way forever. I mean, look at the confusion. We teach children about centimetres and metres in school, and then when you ask someone how tall they are, even a young person, they tell you in feet and inches, and they give their weight in stones and pounds. We buy things for the house in metres, carpets and so on, but when you buy a house, the room sizes are often given in feet and inches. Then you go out in the road and all the distances are in yards and miles. Now, Ireland changed over from miles to kilometres in 2005. That means Britain is the last country in Europe to use miles.
But does that matter? The important thing is that the British people should decide, not a group of bureaucrats in Brussels.
OK, Simon, thank you very much. Now, today we have the news that the European Commission is not going to force Britain to use metric measurements for goods. This means that our British stones, pounds and ounces are safe, at least for the time being. Later, I'll be talking to Simon Wilson from the Weights and Measures Society, but first a little background. The plan was that greengrocers would go metric in a couple of years, but now the European Commission has decided to abandon the idea. After months of consultations with British industry and consumer groups, the European officials are now convinced that emotions are still running high and that moving over to metric weights would just turn more people in Britain against the European Union. The Commission also accepted the British government's argument that European industry needed to sell to American markets. And of course, the United States doesn't use the metric system and perhaps wouldn't want to import products using only metric weights and measures. So, the Weights and Measures Society have been fighting compulsory conversion to the metric system for years. Tonight in the studio, we have Simon Wilson to speak for them. Simon, good evening.
Hello, Lisa.
So, good news, a victory?
Yes, we're very pleased.
And what do you want to see now? A return to the old system?
No, not at all. We can't turn the clock back. We're in favour of freedom. People should be free to use whatever system they like, without fear of prosecution.
And some people have been taken to court over weights and measures, haven't they?
Yes, most notably Steve Thoburn. He was a greengrocer in Sunderland. He owned three shops in the city, and in 2001 he was arrested for selling bananas by the pound. This caused outrage in Britain. He was the front page story in several newspapers at the time. And the thing is, Steve wasn't anti-metric. He just wanted his customers to have the right to choose, so he sold in pounds or kilos, whatever they wanted.
But what's so bad about the metric system? Surely it's easier to count with it. I mean, you can multiply everything by 10. 10 millimetres to a centimetre, 100 centimetres.
Well, that may be so, but we've been using the British system for hundreds of years, and we don't want people to be forced to change over. That's the point, individual freedom.
But surely we don't want to go on this way forever. I mean, look at the confusion. We teach children about centimetres and metres in school, and then when you ask someone how tall they are, even a young person, they tell you in feet and inches, and they give their weight in stones and pounds. We buy things for the house in metres, carpets and so on, but when you buy a house, the room sizes are often given in feet and inches. Then you go out in the road and all the distances are in yards and miles. Now, Ireland changed over from miles to kilometres in 2005. That means Britain is the last country in Europe to use miles.
But does that matter? The important thing is that the British people should decide, not a group of bureaucrats in Brussels.
OK, Simon, thank you very much.
Listen to two speakers during a broadcast. Answer the questions that follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 2, before you hear the recording.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Fun at One show. Today, we'll be talking about useful future inventions and we'll be asking you for your ideas. In the studio with me is inventor and entrepreneur Eric Jennings. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Kirsty.
Eric and I are waiting for you to text us about something that doesn't exist yet, but that you'd like to see invented in the future. Text us on 07781 833338. What invention could improve your life? Eric, you've been involved in developing a new gadget that could save time in the kitchen. Can you tell me about that?
Well, Kirsty, it's a new kind of oven that cooks food to perfection. All you have to do is swipe the barcode on the food packaging and the oven will cook the food for the exact time required.
So it's really a microwave oven, but with a slight difference?
The big difference is that you don't waste time punching in numbers, then checking to see if the food's ready, then checking again and again. You can just sit back and relax, because the oven never overcooks the food.
Well, my ultimate gadget would be a robot to do all the housework. Does such a thing exist?
Not quite yet, but we're working hard on that.
Well, I think that would be a wonderful thing. OK, we've got a text from Naima from Ayr, who says there just aren't enough hours in the day. One third of our lives are wasted sleeping. She wants something to keep her awake at night without making her feel tired in the day.
What you need, Naima, is the instant sleep chamber. I saw it in the Museum of Future Inventions in the States. It's meant to give you all the benefits of a full night's sleep. You simply sit inside the chamber for a few seconds, and this replaces 8 hours sleep. Supposedly, you feel bright and alert for almost 24 hours a day.
I dread to think what happens inside that chamber. Anyway, I enjoy my sleep, don't you? Think of all those dreams you'd miss out on.
Sure, but think of all those things you could be doing with that extra time.
OK. Let's look at two more texts before the break. This one's from Luke in Carlisle. Luke says what we need is a bad weather buster. Sounds like another popular idea. Only thing is, who would be given the power to control the weather? Imagine how successful politicians would be if they could promise clear sunny days and rain on tap, so to speak, and actually deliver their promise.
Each country would use mirrors in space to change the weather patterns. Imagine the chaos.
On a more serious note, here's a text from Jim in Fife. He'd like to find a foolproof way to avoid identity theft. He says that someone stole his identity and ran up a bill of more than £20,000 in credit card bills in his name.
It's only a matter of time before someone comes up with some form of non-transferable ID based on biological markers like DNA. You can just imagine it. You'll have to submit a hair to prove you're old enough to buy cigarettes, or use a hair instead of a passport to board a plane.
What about bald people then?
That's a point.
Well, we're going to take a short commercial break now. Keep texting us with your views and join us again after the break. Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Fun at One show. Today we'll be talking about useful future inventions and we'll be asking you for your ideas. In the studio with me is inventor and entrepreneur Eric Jennings. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Kirsty.
Eric and I are waiting for you to text us about something that doesn't exist yet, but that you'd like to see invented in the future. Text us on 07781 833338. What invention could improve your life? Eric, you've been involved in developing a new gadget that could save time in the kitchen. Can you tell me about that?
Well, Kirsty, it's a new kind of oven that cooks food to perfection. All you have to do is swipe the barcode on the food packaging and the oven will cook the food for the exact time required.
So it's really a microwave oven, but with a slight difference?
The big difference is that you don't waste time punching in numbers, then checking to see if the food's ready, then checking again and again. You can just sit back and relax, because the oven never overcooks the food.
Well, my ultimate gadget would be a robot to do all the housework. Does such a thing exist?
Not quite yet, but we're working hard on that.
Well, I think that would be a wonderful thing. OK, we've got a text from Naima from Ayr, who says there just aren't enough hours in the day. One third of our lives are wasted sleeping. She wants something to keep her awake at night without making her feel tired in the day.
What you need, Naima, is the instant sleep chamber. I saw it in the Museum of Future Inventions in the States. It's meant to give you all the benefits of a full night's sleep. You simply sit inside the chamber for a few seconds, and this replaces 8 hours sleep. Supposedly, you feel bright and alert for almost 24 hours a day.
I dread to think what happens inside that chamber. Anyway, I enjoy my sleep, don't you? Think of all those dreams you'd miss out on.
Sure, but think of all those things you could be doing with that extra time.
OK. Let's look at two more texts before the break. This one's from Luke in Carlisle. Luke says what we need is a bad weather buster. Sounds like another popular idea. Only thing is, who would be given the power to control the weather? Imagine how successful politicians would be if they could promise clear sunny days and rain on tap, so to speak, and actually deliver their promise.
Each country would use mirrors in space to change the weather patterns. Imagine the chaos.
On a more serious note, here's a text from Jim in Fife. He'd like to find a foolproof way to avoid identity theft. He says that someone stole his identity and ran up a bill of more than £20,000 in credit card bills in his name.
It's only a matter of time before someone comes up with some form of non-transferable ID based on biological markers like DNA. You can just imagine it. You'll have to submit a hair to prove you're old enough to buy cigarettes, or use a hair instead of a passport to board a plane.
What about bald people then?
That's a point.
Well, we're going to take a short commercial break now. Keep texting us with your views and join us again after the break.
Listen to a talk by the founder of a business and answer the questions that follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 3, before you hear the recording.
As many of you will know, Innocent Smoothies, those natural pure fruit drinks, have taken the world by storm. We're delighted to be joined by one of the co-founders of Innocent, Richard Reed. Richard, over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to do two things. One is give a brief history about the company, how myself and my two friends got started. Secondly, I'll talk about the Innocent approach to business. So, the history of the company. It was set up by myself and my two closest friends. We'd known each other for 6 or 7 years, we were at the same college, and we were on holiday together when we came up with the Innocent idea. I was once given an important piece of advice. If you're setting up a business, make sure you know who your target audience is. Make sure you understand them and know what they want. At that stage, the only target audience we knew was ourselves, and what did we want on a day-to-day basis? For us, it was something fresh and healthy to combat our busy lifestyles. So our idea was to make a natural, healthy drink. And we started by literally buying 500 pounds of fruit and turning it into our favourite smoothie. That was in August 98, when we sold bottles of smoothies from a stall at a music festival. We had a sign that said, "Should we give up our day jobs to make these smoothies?" And we had a bin for yes and a bin for no, and we asked people to vote using their empty bottles. At the end of the weekend, the yes bin was pretty full, and there were a few in the no bin. We traced them back to our mums. I think they were trying to persuade us not to give up our decent jobs. It gave us the confidence to resign the next day and start up Innocent full-time. We managed to start up in April 99, I remember we sold 24 bottles the first day, which wasn't bad for a first day. At the moment, we're selling about 500,000 bottles a day. So definitely for us, it's been a big ride, going from absolutely nothing to the company we are now. So that's the history of the company. The second thing I'll talk about is our approach to doing business. We want to leave things a little bit better than we find them. A noble intention is all very well and good, but how are you actually going to achieve that? We've got a lot more questions than we have answers at the moment, but it comes down to several things. We think first and foremost it's the nature of what you make. We have to make stuff that nutritionally is totally natural and totally healthy, even though that may mean compromising on price. The second bit is about our packaging choices. Can we make packaging that's got a lighter footprint? That's why we brought out this bottle that now biodegrades. You can put it in a compost heap and 5 weeks later it's turned into sugar and water. Thirdly, we're about green energy use, using it and conserving it. So right from day one, Innocent's always run on green energy. And the fourth thing we believe companies can do if they're successful is share some of the profits they create. So again, right from the beginning, 10% of the profit goes into funding rural projects in the countries where the fruit comes from. Finally, I actually don't think being more environmentally friendly or ethical drives that many sales. What it's actually about is it lets you work with a more talented, more intelligent, more committed group of people. That's the reason for the success of Innocent so far. It's the employees, the fantastic people I get to work with. Thanks very much.
As many of you will know, Innocent Smoothies, those natural pure fruit drinks, have taken the world by storm. We're delighted to be joined by one of the co-founders of Innocent, Richard Reed. Richard, over to you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to do two things. One is give a brief history about the company, how myself and my two friends got started. Secondly, I'll talk about the Innocent approach to business. So, the history of the company. It was set up by myself and my two closest friends. We'd known each other for 6 or 7 years. We were at the same college and we were on holiday together when we came up with the Innocent idea. I was once given an important piece of advice. If you're setting up a business, make sure you know who your target audience is. Make sure you understand them and know what they want. At that stage, the only target audience we knew was ourselves. And what did we want on a day-to-day basis? For us, it was something fresh and healthy to combat our busy lifestyles. So our idea was to make a natural, healthy drink. And we started by literally buying 500 pounds of fruit and turning it into our favourite smoothie. That was in August 98, when we sold bottles of smoothies from a stall at a music festival. We had a sign that said, "Should we give up our day jobs to make these smoothies?" And we had a bin for yes and a bin for no. And we asked people to vote using their empty bottles. At the end of the weekend, the yes bin was pretty full, and there were a few in the no bin. We traced them back to our mums. I think they were trying to persuade us not to give up our decent jobs. It gave us the confidence to resign the next day and start up Innocent full-time. We managed to start up in April 99. I remember we sold 24 bottles the first day, which wasn't bad for a first day. At the moment, we're selling about 500,000 bottles a day. So definitely for us, it's been a big ride, going from absolutely nothing to the company we are now. So that's the history of the company. The second thing I'll talk about is our approach to doing business. We want to leave things a little bit better than we find them. A noble intention is all very well and good, but how are you actually going to achieve that? We've got a lot more questions than we have answers at the moment, but it comes down to several things. We think first and foremost it's the nature of what you make. We have to make stuff that nutritionally is totally natural and totally healthy, even though that may mean compromising on price. The second bit is about our packaging choices. Can we make packaging that's got a lighter footprint? That's why we brought out this bottle that now biodegrades. You can put it in a compost heap and 5 weeks later it's turned into sugar and water. Thirdly, we're about green energy use, using it and conserving it. So right from day one, Innocent's always run on green energy. And the fourth thing we believe companies can do if they're successful is share some of the profits they create. So again, right from the beginning, 10% of the profit goes into funding rural projects in the countries where the fruit comes from. Finally, I actually don't think being more environmentally friendly or ethical drives that many sales. What it's actually about is it lets you work with a more talented, more intelligent, more committed group of people. That's the reason for the success of Innocent so far. It's the employees, the fantastic people I get to work with. Thanks very much.
You now have 1 minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.